Okay, so welcome back everyone for our Bein Hazmanim topic. We're doing still Sefer Shmuel, but we're doing a tangential topic about the borders of Israel in the book of Shoftim, which we finished studying or going over, and Sefer Shmuel. And we talked about the connection between the two books, how they're thematically connected. Both books require a very basic knowledge of Israel's geography and topography to appreciate, especially the battles, and half the books are about military battles. So I'm going to begin with the general presentation of the borders of Israel. And I'll begin with a general observation, and then I'll share this, the source sheet. In fact, I can share the source sheet in the chat now in the meantime. Here we go. That's the source sheet. Oh, yeah, source sheet. I'll do that one more time. Make sure it got there. Okay. If you ask anybody, have you heard of the land of Israel? They all say yes. But then ask somebody, where are the borders of Israel? You know, take a map. Where are the borders? So the western border is very easy. Someone tell me what the western border is?
Mediterranean.
See, okay. And I like to say the only machloket we have with our enemies is the Mediterranean Sea our eastern border or western border? So we Haskin is our western border, but other people
are
our eastern border. Okay.
The western border is really Nachal Mitzrayim.
We'll see.
Bani El Arish.
We will see soon. Okay. But it's, but the western, that could be a southern border as well. We'll see. But it, the Mediterranean sea line is definitely a border. Does that give us rights to the oil a couple hundred kilometers outside from there? Ask your local, Hezbollah member. Okay. So now, so let's continue now with the, you mentioned the southern border. What's the southern border of Israel? Is it Nachal El Arish? Could be. What else could it be? It might be Aza. It might be Beersheba. It could be Eilat. It could be Egypt.
Dahab.
What?
No, I just meant a joke. Dahab.
I'm trying to think of, I think I read in Chumash that Moshe Rabbeinu, I mean, Aaron was buried in Hor HaHar. We're not sure exactly where that is, but there was most of the time in the desert, we were in Kadesh Midbar Tzin, which is in the Negev, which is near like the small crater, if you know Israel today, in Nachal Tzin. Clearly, that's not part of Israel because we were not allowed to go into Israel. But most of the time in the desert, the 38 years in the desert, we are in the Negev. So clearly, the Negev is not part of Israel as far as Chumash is concerned. So nowadays it is. So do we keep 2 days Yom Tov there? We'll see. It sounds complicated now. We'll make it really easy soon. So the southern border is complicated. It's hard to draw a line. If I go to the east, what's the eastern border?
Jordan.
Okay, I can nominate two rivers for the eastern border.
It can be
the
Jordan
River. Or what other river might be the eastern border? Is there another river that might be the another border of Israel?
Euphrates.
Remember? Nahar Prat? Anyone ever hear from the Nile to the Euphrates is the borders of Israel?
Mm-hmm.
Who's heard that saying before? From the Nile to the Euphrates.
Yes.
That's
a pretty serious border, isn't it? That's like more than half of the Middle East. Okay? But there's another famous saying, which we saw in Sefer Shoftim already, from Dan to Beersheba. Remember, Am Yisrael gathered from Dan to Beersheba to Mitzpah, to go to war. From Dan to Beersheba, we had in Sefer Shmuel, from Dan to Beersheba, everyone knew that Shmuel was a trustworthy Navi. That was in Perek Gimel. Maybe we'll take a look again. So Dan to Beersheba, we'll see in a minute, is relatively small. That's from the Galilee down to Beersheba today. So the eastern border is not so clear. On the other hand, we heard of the border of the Euphrates River. So what is it? Ask the 2.5 tribes. They'll tell you a lot about it.
It's actually the northern border.
Yeah. Now, how about the northern border?
River is really the northern border.
It's the northern border. That might be the Prat. That might be the Euphrates. Because the Euphrates is both north and east. Is Lebanon part of Israel?
Yes.
Where in Lebanon is the border?
Yeah.
Is Tyre, is Tzor and Sidon, are they part of Israel? Beirut?
No.
Okay. We'll see. We'll prove why not in a minute. So what is the border? Is it Rosh HaNikra? Like it is today? Is the Galilee Panhandle, Metula, is that part of Israel?
The passageway through Lebanon is part of the border. That's Halevanon.
Okay, but we have to see where in Lebanon. We have to see where in the northern border would that be? Now, in theory, the border should be natural. Therefore, a river could be a natural border. A sea is a natural border. A deep valley. But if you look at borders today, it's like the borders that the British drew. Remember with the mandate, they drew a line from pretty much from El Arish or from Aza down to Eilat and drew a line on a map, and that became Israel's border. No one ever thought that would be a border. That was just a dividing line. And the width of the pencil caused a giant argument in the Camp David Accords. That's what happened with Taba. Taba is in the width of a pencil mark because everyone saw where the borders. We have the exact maps from the British, but the width of the pencil mark is about, couple kilometers on the map. So the borders get really complicated. And the question is, borders in biblical times, how are they defined? How are they defined? Now, we'll get to a lot of these things in a minute, but I want to go back now to a map. So I'm pointing it is that everyone knows the land of Israel. It's pretty hard to pinpoint what exactly the borders are. Okay? Okay. I'm going to share my screen now and we'll go to our source sheet. Where are we? Here we are. We want this one here. Okay. So, I'm going to show you a map here and we're going to try to find these main things. Now, this is a satellite map. Hope you can see my screen. I'm going to use that should be good. Let me make it a little smaller. Drop smaller so we can see. Then I'll zoom in bigger in a minute. Okay. Here's a satellite map from NASA. Okay. I hope you can see it. I'm going to use a little highlighter that should do it, a spotlight. Everyone see my spotlight? I have a little red dot. You see it there? Okay. Now, just take a look at the map and make sure that you see the Nile River. That's the Upper Nile, starting in Ethiopia and going up this way. Okay. That's, you see here, the Nile Delta. We'll talk about it in a minute. Okay. And then here we have the Sinai Peninsula. Okay. And this is the Persian Gulf. You should all be familiar with it. And here you see the Euphrates River going this way. I'll highlight it. And we'll see later the Tigris River. I think to mention even in the borders of Gan Eden, the rivers of Gan Eden. If the Pishon is the Nile River, then in Gan Eden, basically you have the four rivers of Gan Eden are basically defining the borders of the Middle East or possibly of Israel, as a lot of commentators point out. Now, so basically if I'm looking at from Nahar Mitzrayim, that's clearly the Nile. Right. And Nahar Prat, that's the Euphrates. It's not as clear as the Nile. If our borders are from Nahar Mitzrayim to Nahar Prat, from the Nile to the Euphrates, Israel is supposed to be a massive country, like over half the Middle East. Now, if I go down to Beersheba, whoa, right, that's barely the size of this little red marker. I'm gonna make my map bigger now. Hope this works. I'm gonna zoom in here, and that didn't work. Mouse, okay. That doesn't work either. That's not going to work. I'll figure this out in a second. Here we go. Okay. That's better. No, that's not good at all. Here we go. I zoomed in a little bit. Let's get back to my spotlight. Okay. Notice here's the Nile Delta. Okay. This is the Sinai Peninsula. This is the Dead Sea. You see it? The Dead Sea. The bottom of the Dead Sea is pretty much opposite Beersheba. Beersheba is over here. I'll make a mark in a minute. This little dot here is the Kinneret. Got that? Now, if I make it a little bit bigger, see if that works. So drop bigger. Okay. My spotlight again. Again. Notice from Dan to Beersheba, let me actually use a different drawing tool. From Dan to Beersheba would be about, here's Beersheba, pretty much. And this would be Dan over here. And if I take the Jordan River and the Mediterranean, that's about the size of Israel, as opposed to the Euphrates and the Nile. Got it? So it's very hard to say that from Dan to Beersheba is the same border as the Nile to the Euphrates. So we're going to see the source of the Nile to the Euphrates. We see the source of from Dan to Beersheba, and we'll try to figure out how to corroborate the two different borders. Now, I'm going to clear all those little things there. And mouse and clear. And I want you to notice something, which is interesting, because this is a map from a satellite. Now, notice the green spots. This big green spot, this triangle, is called the Nile Delta. Everyone understand why it's green? The water from the Nile River, from the upper Nile, then to the lower Nile, it reaches this lower point here near Cairo, and it irrigates this entire delta all the way here to Alexandria on the coast of the sea. But this is most likely Ramses on the eastern side, I think, of this delta. It's an argument. We see the Bitter Lakes over here. Here's the Suez Canal goes. Let me put this here for the marker. This would be the Suez Canal today. Alexander, I think, is over here somewhere. Cairo's around here. And then in the big cities in Israel, this would be Beersheba. This would be Jerusalem, about here. This would be Haifa, pretty much over here. Tel Aviv over here. Got it? Let's just have an idea what things are here. But notice in this map, notice all the green. See that? Notice the green here along the coast, and the green here in the Golan Heights, and a lot of green up here in Turkey. But the rest of the Middle East is parched, isn't it? Now, there's a very logical reason why. What makes things green? Rain. You need rain for things to grow. We're the sources of water. So the Nile River has a lot of sources in Central Africa that feed the Nile River. And that's why the Delta is green. The Mediterranean Sea evaporates. The clouds form. And remember, the clouds go this way, don't they? The clouds on the map usually go from west to east. That's why they're on your television screen all the time. And therefore, when the water evaporates, the clouds go in this direction. They come inland, hit the mountain range. Ask a meteorologist why, but there's a change in pressure, and that causes the rain to fall up to the top of the mountain range. We'll talk about the mountain range very soon. And therefore, all along the coast of the Mediterranean, for a couple, 30, 40 kilometers inland, we get lots of green and lots of growth. And as you go farther north, there's more and more water, and that's how you get the Golan Heights and most of Lebanon. That's why this area is so fertile. So I remember learning that, what do people want from Israel? We're only like 5% or 2-3% of the whole Middle East. What's the big deal? Well, the big deal is, even though we're only 2-3% of the Middle East, we're pretty much the most fertile land in the whole Middle East. So we're basically getting, the land, as Kumpa says, is Eretz Tova. It's a good land. It's about Chalav Udvash. It's a land where you can grow things with a lot of potential. So basically, the big areas of green, most of Israel and the Golan Heights, you see very well. Now, I want to talk about the borders now. Now we're going to go to Psukim. But this was simply the satellite map. And we want to try and figure out what's going on, why there's two sets of borders and why the border is so unclear. But we do see how from Dan to Beersheba, basically from the southern border of Lebanon, from the area of the Galilee, down to the bottom of the Dead Sea, that area relatively is very fertile. So now we can clear the drawings and stop the share and go to our sources. Okay. Our first source is an interesting one. If you didn't look yet, you'll find entering. The first time we find the sources is in Sefer Bereshit in chapter 10, when we get the 70 or the three sons of Noach and their offspring. Called Todo Beinoch, chapter 10 in Sefer Bereshit. Now, there's something interesting that happens there. In fact, I'm going to share a different screen now. I'm going to share a regular Tanakh because I want you to see the Parshiot. If I go to Sefer Bereshit and I want to move with a Parshiot, I open up chapter 10. The opening line is a bit misleading. It says, Ve'ele Todo Bnei Noach, Shem Cham V'yafet. Ve'ebden Banim Acharam Abu. B'nei Yefet, dot, dot, dot. Now, if I look at this whole perek, I find three parshiot. From verse 1 to 13, to 14, Aleph to Dalet is one parshia. Okay. Then I have another parshia, Pasek Tetvav, Techav. And I have a third parshia to the end of the perek. Got it? Three parshiot. The last line, Elu Mishpot B'nei Noach L'Todotam, These are the families from the house of Noah, by the generations, the nations, and from there, all the different nations divided after the flood. What we call the 70 nations, if you count them up carefully, you'll find 70. Now, you would expect the three parshiot to correlate to Shem, Ham, and Yafet. And sure enough, the first one is B'nai Yafet. The last one is Shem. And you expect the middle one to be Ham. But it's not. The first one is, the first half is Yafet, up till the first two, three psukim is Yafet, which is mostly Europe, you know, area of Greece, maybe Turkey, and Europe, area of Europe that's closest to us. Sure. Ham is mostly Africa. Uvenei Ham. When we get here, notice Ham's children. Remember, Ham was the father not just of Canaan. Ham also had Cush. That's Ethiopia, Mitzrayim, Put, and Canaan. And then Cush, we go more and more. We have lots of grandchildren, etc. We talk about Nimrod. And also Mitzrayim is also a son of Canaan, of Ham, I'm sorry. Canaan and Mitzrayim are brothers. So, Bnei Ham became Cush, Mitzrayim, Put, and Canaan. Then Canaan has a bunch of, we'll see Canaan's children in a minute. But notice, we have Yefet and Ham in the first Parshia. And Canaan gets his own Parshia, which is clearly building up to God promising Eretz Canaan later on. We'll see why. Because even though we have the names of all the different nations, we don't have their borders. Except for Canaan. Canaan had Sidon, okay, his firstborn in Chet, right? And then Yevusi, Amori, Girgashi, Chivi, Arki, Visini, Arvadi, Tzamri, Chamati, etc. Basically, most of the Canaanite nations. And then we're told, unlike any other nation, Vahi Gvula Canaani, Mitzidon Bocha Grara Adaza, Bocha Stoma Vamora Ad Matzvaim Adlasha. Because we have a special parshiyah about Canaan, and unlike any other nation, the borders of Canaan. Let's take a look at those borders. From Sidon, along the coast, down to Aza, and going back to Sidon, turning around a little bit, going down to Sdom and Amora by the Dead Sea. If I go back to my map, I'll stop my share again and go back to the other map, and try to make it a little bit bigger, make it a lot bigger actually. If I want to find what are the borders here that we're talking about, Sidon is about over here. So north, I'll make a little marker here. Annotate and draw. Okay. Sidon, we'll see better on the map, is about here. From Sidon down to Aza. Sorry, what kind of, Sidon down to Aza, that's not good. Sidon down to Aza is down to here, pretty much. That's Aza, but on a straight line, that's, clear that up. Okay. Clear the whole drawing. That doesn't work. Clear. There. No, that's not working. Clear. No. Whatever, it's not clearing, but I'll get it in a minute. Okay. Again, Sidon down to Aza. I'll redraw it. And from Sidon, going down to Sdom and Amora by the Dead Sea, or basically what we call from Dan to Beersheba. So the first time we have the borders of Canaan, which are pretty much from Dan to Beersheba, we'll see them later in Parshat Maaseh. It's relatively small country, but at the center of the Middle East. And notice, Shem is here, Yefet is here, and Ham is here, right? Or basically Israel smack in the middle between Shem, Ham, and Yefet. Shem becomes the Mesopotamia, Yefet becomes Europe, and Ham becomes Africa. Again, don't be surprised that Israel is located smack in the middle. That'll have a lot of thematic importance later on. Okay, so I'll stop the share and go back to our psukim. Oh, I didn't have to change the thing, did I? Okay, back to the psukim. So that's our first source. Then, of course, in chapter 12, everyone knows, God tells Avram, Lechacha mi'artzcha, ela aretz asher arecha. God doesn't say what the land is. He'll show you the land. And Avram arrives in the land, Pasuk Vav. Ve'avo Avram ba'aretz ad mekom Shechem ad Elon Moreh. And God tells Avram, this is, you've arrived. He didn't say the borders, but he's arrived in the middle of the land. Avram builds a mizbeach, and then Avram continues traveling. And finally, in the end of chapter 13, God tells Avram, after he leaves Beit El, Kumi telech ba'aretz, you walk in the land to its width and its length, I'm giving you. And, but before, God told Avram, lift up your eyes from Beit El after Lot leaves him. Okay? Look in all four directions. Safona v'negva v'kedma v'yama. Look in all four directions. All this land that you can see, I'm giving you and your children. Now, is Avram and his children, is that referring to all of Avram's children or only Yitzchak and Yaakov and basically the 12 tribes? We'll have to see as we go on. Now we get to our main source, which is, I'll go now to an English Hebrew Tanakh. We'll go back to a, where should we go? Got this one. We want a regular Sefer Bereshit. Let's open up Bereshit chapter 15. Chapter 15 is super important, everyone knows. Actually, chapter 14 is the War of the Four Kings and Five Kings, or basically the four kings from Mesopotamia taking the five kings of a small area in Canaan. And in chapter 15, after those events of the four kings and five kings, God makes his first conversation and dialogue with Avram, if you know, in the first treaty, without going into the details. God tells Avram, the reason I took you out of Ur Kazim, I took you out of Mesopotamia, to give you this land to inherit, and Mishtar to possess, means to conquer. And Abram wants to know how and when it's going to happen. God tells him it's going to take hundreds of years, not in your lifetime. And we have the framework of 400 years. But the bottom line at the end of the story is, Bayohu, in verse 18, on that day, Karat Hashem et Abram brit lemor, God convened a covenant with Abram saying, L'zaracha natati et haaretz hazot min nahar mitzrayim ad nahar gadol nahar prat. Your offspring, I'm giving this land from the Nile to the Euphrates. Now, clearly, never in Jewish history have our borders been from the Nile to the Euphrates. No Navi ever tells the people, how come you haven't conquered up to the Nile River? Or how come you haven't conquered all the way to the Euphrates? It's not divided up among the tribes. It's not much of a feasible border at all. On the other hand, it seems very large. One answer could be, it's not talking only about Yaakov's children, the 12 tribes. It might be including Yishmael and Yitzhak's descendants. So we have many descendants from Yishmael and from Yitzhak and maybe Bnei Keturah. So maybe the whole Middle East is promised to Avram Avinu and only Yaakov gets Eretz Canaan. That's one possibility. The other possibility, which I want to follow, is Nahar Mitzrayim and Nahar Prat are not borders, but rather areas. What I want to claim is, Nahar Mitzrayim is referring to Egypt, and Nahar Prat is referring to Mesopotamia, which could be Aram, it could be Babel, it could be Babylonia, it could be Ashur, the Assyrians. There's always someone controlling what's called the Fertile Crescent. Anyone who learned world history always knows that civilization begins, at least Western civilization begins in the Fertile Crescent around Nahar Prat and in Egypt. Now the reason for that is relatively simple. Almost every major civilization begins with a major river. You need a river for water. You need a river for transportation, for trade, for washing, for health. It's every major city, name any major city and you have a major river going through it. Paris, London, sort of New York, New York, the tri-state area for sure. If you look at that area, but every major country, the river is usually the center of the country. And never in history was a Nile River ever a border or the Euphrates. It's always the center of a country, which makes sense. Now, if God's picking, wait one second. I'll get to Asher's question in a minute. Okay. Why I'm saying it's a Nile, we'll get to in a minute. But my claim is that Nahar Mitzrayim, if it's the Nile, like the river that's in Egypt, if it's the Nile has always been the center of a country. What I want to claim is, if God is picking a nation to have an influence on other nations, if the goal of God starting a nation is what's the Nevi'im called being a light to other nations, but we see that theme already in Dvarim, we see this even in the beginning of Lech Lecha, bringing blessing to nations, God cares about his entire creation. If I go back to a mega theme in Sefer Bereshit, Bereshit begins with God's creation, not just of nature, but also of humankind and civilization. And he seems to care about all humankind, talks about all the nations. He's upset with human behavior. He wants humans to be better. And it seems like he's choosing a nation to be a model nation for other nations to learn from. From a strategic point of view, right? I need a land that can fulfill its purpose. And therefore, strategically, we call this location, location, location. If God cares about of civilization. And the two great centers of ancient civilization are Mesopotamia and Egypt. Israel is located smack in the middle between those two civilizations, and not just geographically in the middle, along the main trade route that connects them together. We'll talk about the trade route in a minute. And therefore, if Israel is doing a good job, acting in a way that sanctifies God, we get a lot of visibility. People travel through our land. People hear about us. In other words, we can have an impact on the other nations if we behave properly and we become involved in world history. So therefore, having a land located in the middle of the Middle East, between the center of civilization, on the main trade route, becomes a vehicle through which we can accomplish our goal. On the flip side, if we're doing a bad job, God has many tools to keep us in check. And we saw that in the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, that God used the enemies around us as a whip, as a check, to make sure we follow God, because the second we go astray, there's always wars in the Middle East. Now, there doesn't have to be, but when we're doing a bad job, it's not hard for a war to start. That happens a lot. So one possibility is that when God promises Avram Avinu, the borders of Nar Mitzrayim to Nar Parat, he's not saying your land includes them. It's in between them. As I'm giving you a land between Egypt and Mesopotamia, where it's going to start with the kernel in the middle, we call Eretz Canaan. We'll get to Eretz Canaan in a minute. But later, you can expand your borders, but never more than the area of Canaan and the surrounding area. But you don't take over Egypt. You're supposed to have an influence over Egypt, which might be the deeper meaning of Yerusha. We'll get to that soon. Now, in contrast to Brit Ben Abtarim, there's one other covenant in Sefer Bereshit, which is called Brit Milah. Without going to the complicated Sharon Bereshit, but Brit Ben Abtarim, God's name is exclusively Yudke Vavke, the Tetragamon, which we call like the God of history, the God who's involved, like taking us out of Egypt, the God who's involved in our history and does great miracles. That's God's name, Yudke Vavke. And the God who makes the Brit with Avram Avinu and Brit Milah in a minute, that'll be Elohim, who's going to promise him Eretz Canaan. But why that is, that's a Shir in Sefer Bereshit. Now, let's go back to our Chumash and go down and take a look at chapter 17 in Bereshit. So we have the first Brit. Remember, there's two Britot in Sefer Bereshit. One B'Shem Elohim, one B'Shem Havaya. And the Brit Ben Abtarim, God's name Havaya, is Nahar Mitzrayim to Nahar Parat. But the same God, because we Paskar in Kippur, Hashem Hu Elohim. Chumash uses two names for the same God. Why he does that, that's a whole theme in Chumash. But in a nutshell, Avram is 99. God tells Avram, I'm going to make a brit between me and you. Avram falls on his face. By Daber Ito Elohim Lemor, Elohim speaks to Avram, I'm going to make a brit with you. You'll be a mentor to many nations. He changes his name. I'll multiply you. And then Pasuk Zayin, Vakimoti Briti Benu Benecha. I'm going to establish a covenant between me and you and between our offspring. Let me just close the door for a second. Okay, sorry about that. I'll make a brit between you and your offspring, etc. An eternal brit. I'll be your God, Yot Lachel Elohim. That's the brit. A brit milah. Circumcision, again, is an oath brit, but the brit itself is, I'm your God, you're my people. That's why God took us out of Egypt. We say every morning, Yot Lachel Elohim. Or Batem Tu Lila'am, that's the fourth cup coming out of Egypt. But this idea that we're God's people, or he's our boss, and we're his nation, that's the core covenant of Brit Milah. And a reminder of that will be circumcision. Now, in addition to that, as a vehicle to accomplish this goal, when atati lechal zarcha achrech et eretz mugurecha, et ko eretz kanan lachuzat olam, baiti lechem naluhim. Okay? I'm giving you or setting aside for you in your offspring the land that you now are sojourning in, Avram Avinu, the land of Canaan, for an eternal inheritance, right? And I'll be your God. Now, in my opinion, this is not a promise. This is not saying, if you keep my laws, I'm giving you the land. It's not saying that this is the covenant itself, but rather, in order to accomplish the goal of the covenant, to be a nation representing God, I'm setting aside for you a land that, as a vehicle, to help you accomplish your goal. And if that understanding is correct, that affects in many ways how we understand many mitzvot and chumash, especially about the land. For example, all the laws of Shemitah come back to this theme. The land belongs to God. The first Rashi in Chumash talks about the same idea. The land belongs to God forever. We have many mitzvot that remind us of that. We have the land on a loan. We own it only for the purpose of sanctifying God. We do a bad job. It's every day in Shema. God might throw us out if we misbehave. It's always the goal to return to that land, even if we go into exile, and it will be our eternal goal, but we can lose it if we're doing a bad job, but we can't lose it forever. No. What is Eretz Canaan? We saw already the very simple borders in Perek Yud and Sefer Bereshit. And if I jump ahead to Sefer Bamidbar, should be open, I'll just go right there. If I go to Sefer Bamidbar, Parshat Maaseh, if I go at the end of chapter 33, after all the Masa'ot, we have the famous commandment, God tells Moshe in Arvot Moav by the Jordan River, as he's right before he's about to die, God tells Moshe, tell Bnei Israel, when you cross over the Jordan to the land of Canaan, you have to inherit or possess all the land, get rid of all the idol worship. And the famous line, you have to conquer the land and settle it. That's Sefer Yoshua, because I'm setting aside for you to inherit. And then you have to give out the nachalot based on relative population, as is done in Sefer Yoshua. And then God says, if you don't do a good job doing this, instead of you conquering them, they'll conquer you, and there'll be a thorn on your side. And that's what happens in Sefer Shoftim. Sefer Shoftim relates this line in the very beginning. Now, that's a general commandment. And the next chapter, in chapter 34, we get very explicit now. What are the borders of Canaan? You have them right here. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe l'emor, Tzav et bnei Yisrael v'amarta lehem, ki atem ba'im me'eretz Canaan, when you come to the land of Canaan, zot ha'aretz asher tipol lachem nachala, eretz Canaan l'gvulotel. Now we get a much more detailed border of Eretz Canaan. Now, what are the borders? Now we have a southeast border without a shadow of a doubt. The bottom of the Dead Sea, which is pretty much right where Nachal Tzin, you know the Negev, where the Tzin Valley, which begins where in Stable Care, where Ben Gurion's Kever is today. There's a big wide valley that goes east-west, cutting the Negev basically in half. That valley is called Nachal Tzin. It gets flooded all the time. And at the end of Nachal Tzin, if you go towards on the eastern end of Nachal Tzin, right before it hits the bottom of the Dead Sea area, right before it's what's called the Arava, that's going to be Midbar Tzin. That's going to be Kadesh Midbar Tzin. And that's going to be the southeastern border. Okay. Then we get a really complicated border going what's called Maleh Akrabim. Somewhere in the Negev, big argument exactly where it is, but it's quite south of Beersheba, not too far from what's called the small crater and the big crater, but a little north of the Rimon crater, if you know your Negev, and without different names, but basically it goes to Kadesh Barnea and ends up at Chatzar Adar Tzmona and finally ends up Nachla Mitzrayim, Vuyutot Zav Hayama. What's Nachla Mitzrayim? Here we have Nachal Mitzrayim now is the south western border. Now, is Nachal Mitzrayim Nahar Mitzrayim? Is that the same thing? So I want to suggest something here. Let me stop to share for a minute. Anyone who's been to Israel knows there's a Nachal. A Nachal is a riverbed. And riverbed, when it rains in the winter, it has a lot of water. It can flow. In the summer, usually it's dry. So a Nachal is not a river. A Nahar has water all year long. The Jordan River is a Nahar river all year long. Nahar Mitzrayim has water all year long. A Nachal is a riverbed and can dry out. Therefore, Nachal Mitzrayim, most people hold, is Nachal El Arish. But it's a valley a little south of Aza. Now, I need a geographic border. Aza, now, what's basically the border? I want to show you, if I go back this map here. If I go back to the satellite map, wherever it's green, I can populate. So basically, from Dan to Beersheba is basically this whole green area, especially the southern border. See right at the bottom of the Dead Sea over here? That southern border, let me get my annotator again. That southern border, if I go from the bottom of the Dead Sea, Midbar Tzin over here, and let's say that's Nachal Arish over there, again, it moves around a lot, but that would be a natural place to put a border. That's a natural border because below it, you can't inhabit. You can have maybe trade routes going through there. The spice route goes through there. But it's not, there's not enough water until you artificially bring water to the Negev, like Israel did, you know, with its water carrier. You can't have regular cities there. You can't populate the area. And then again, I have the northern border in Dan. So therefore, somewhere that makes the southern border. Now let's go back to, stop this year and go back to the Psukim. But again, that's, Nachum Etzem would be very different than, here, let me show you another map where, let's go back and share my screen again. And let's go to Rabbi Google. Rabbi Google has a nice map. We have Google Maps up here. Let me make this smaller. Everyone knows Google Maps. But, okay. Everyone's done this before on Google Maps. So I go into Israel. I don't need that NASA satellite picture anymore. Here we see, I'm sorry. Let's go to the terrain map. Here we go. Here you see the Nile River. Let me make it back again. Here you can see the Nile River very nicely. Over here, you see, the Sinai Peninsula. Over here would be a lot. Hope you see my mark. Let me actually put my little annotator again. Here's the Nile River. This is the Sinai Peninsula. This is the Suez Canal. This is the Red Sea south of Eilat. This is El Arish down here on the bottom. Aqaba and Eilat is right over here. But the Dead Sea, we'll make it bigger in a minute. It's going to be over here. This would be, down to Beersheba is basically the size of where the red dot of Israel is. It's basically the whole land of Canaan. And then here again, you have the Persian Gulf. This would be the Euphrates River. And this would be the Tigris River with the irrigations between the two rivers. And then you see again the dry area of Saudi Arabia and the desert of Iraq, western Iraq and eastern Jordan. That's the same thing we saw in the satellite photo before, and then Turkey again, very green. Now, if I make it a little bit bigger, so that and make it bigger, there we go. If I'm looking for Nachal El Arish, if I'm not mistaken, you can see very nicely here on the map. See Arish? Hope that's clear. Arish, the city, and that's Nachal El Arish coming this way. If I go from the bottom of the Dead Sea, which would be about here, and draw a line, you are from the bottom. If I take a line from Nachal El Arish and go to the bottom of the Dead Sea, that's a border a little south of Beersheba. That's a very geographical border, very different than it's very different than. Wait a second, the drawings, here we go. That's very different than, I have sorry, maps, I'm sorry. That's very different than the Nile River, which is over here. So Nachal Mitzrayim makes sense, it's over here, not the Nile River. If I go back now to the Psukim, let's close this up and go back to our Psukim in Bereshit. Hope you see them now. We need Bamidbar, my mistake. Bamidbar, we were all the way in chapter 34, and we had the border to, what do you call it? To, in Nachal El Arish, Gvul Atzmon of Nachal Mitzrayim, okay? And then that takes you to the sea. And then Gvul Yam, that's the Mediterranean Sea. Gvul Yam is the Mediterranean border. And then that's the Western border. And then to, where's Gvul Tzafon? From the Mediterranean Sea, you go Hor Ahar. Now, what's Hor Ahar? That's a good question. The mountain on top of the mountain, or the high mountain, or the mountain. Now, it's not the Hor Ahar where Aaron's buried. So Hor Ahar is just a saying for a high mountain in a mountain range. And from Hor Ahar, you go to the Bochamat. Now, because this border is very similar to the border we had in Parshat Noach in chapter 10, it only makes sense that Hor Ahar would be near Sidon. Would that make sense? Remember? Because we had the border from Sidon down to Aza, which is a little north of Nachal El Arish, or Nachal Mitzrayim. Therefore, it makes sense that Hor Ahar would match Sidon. And also, we saw in the border went down to Stoman Amorah, which is by the Dead Sea. That's the southern border, and that's where this border here begins. So if the border in Parshat Bereshit in chapter 10 is from Sidon, is the northern border, it makes sense that Hor Ahar is the northern border. And if you know your geography, the big Lebanese mountains, the Har Lebanon and Har Siryon, which is the Hermon, those are the big two mountain ranges that form the northern border of Israel. So if I say that's Hor Ahar to Levo Hamat, now Hamat who's near where Hamat is, Lebo Hamat is not Hamat. It's on the way to Hamat. We'll see where Lebo Hamat is in a minute. And then Nebu goes to what's called Stada. There's all these places, Yifrona, Chatzar Einan, and that'll be the northern border. Most people hold Chatzar Einan is Marjayun, if you know the word, a little north of Betula. That'd be Gvul Tzafon. And then we have an eastern border, Gvul Kedma, from Chatzar Einan. Says the border goes south via Rad HaGvul to Rivla, to Ayin. Maybe that's Marjayun. And then it goes down and hits the shoulder of the Kinneret. So we know now the Kinneret, and then from the Kinneret, Baigvul HaGardena, so Tzav Yamamelach, Zotia Harz Gvulatel. It's clear that the Jordan River is going to be the eastern border, which matches perfectly the borders again in Sefer Bereshit in chapter 10 with the children of Canaan. And if I go back to my satellite map over here on the Google Maps, if I want to find where that would be up north, if you've been to Rosh HaNikra, Rosh HaNikra, Israel's border today, is not a natural border. If you're looking for a natural border, it's not hard to find at all. Tyre in Sidon. Let's get this a little smaller here for a minute. Here's Tzor and Sidon. But is Sidon referring to Sidon today or the area of Tzor today? Tzor and Sidon are the two big port cities of Lebanon. But assuming that this is the area, if you look here, you can see what's called the Litani River. If you remember the first Lebanon War, Israel's goal was to take the Litani River. I remember being there. I was in the army that time. I remember we actually remember Davi Mincha on the Litani River. We went to downtown Tyre. We saw an old shul there. The first month of the war was like, we sort of won the first month and it was relatively peaceful. And then all the trouble started. Where do you see the border? It's hard here to see, but basically the border would go, here's Kiryat Shmona, but see Metula here. Marjayun should be over here. We'll talk about this valley here in a minute, but the northern border is somewhere around here. What we would call, I think this is a, let me mark it here. It's hard to see it, but what I see here would be pretty much the Litani River would be this area over here. There's Metula here. This valley over here seems to be the area of the Litani. Let me make this smaller for a minute and go to another map for a second. But I'm getting at the northern border from here, from this area, from Ayun. We'll talk about Lebo Hamat. Hamat's up here. But Lebo Hamat would be over here. Remember, the Marat would go Al Lebo Hamat. And then from here, we go down to the Jordan. Let's make this smaller. Their drawings end. Go back to the mouse and make the map smaller. Okay. The border must go. The border has to go. One second. There we go. Draw again. The border has to go from the area here of Betula down by the Kinneret. And therefore it makes sense. It crosses up here somewhere up north. This is a Lebanon mountain. I'll show you a better picture in a minute from the a topographical map picture in a minute. Now, again, those are the borders of Canaan that we've seen all along. Let's clear the drawings and clear this. And that's the main thing I want to show you in Chumash. Now we have to get to Navi. Now, let me do stop this share and go to our source sheet. Let me check the chat real fast. Okay. Shows, okay. We'll talk about Namrisan being the Nile. Why it's called the Yor. That's a class in Sefer Shmot. But I'll deal with that later on if we have time. Okay, where did Shaul attack and defeat Amalek? And why was Amalek there? Amalek does not have a land. They're a nomadic tribe that hang out on the international trade routes. We'll talk about them. We'll see them on the map in a minute. We'll see their stay Amaleki. We'll see later on, but Amalek never has one specific spot. We find them all over the Middle East, wherever there's opportunity. And then were the green areas in the ancient Middle East the same as today's? Most likely, I don't see why not. The weather patterns are relatively the same. Again, where seasons go, they get bigger and smaller, but I don't see any reason why the green areas would be much different than, there's a very logical reason because of the water coming from the Mediterranean. So it makes sense it would be green back then as well. Let's go back now to, back to Chumash, or back to Navi now. Now we have to get to, Okay, instead of closing the screen, I had a I hit leave. Jay, am I back on, Rabbi? I'm back. Okay.
Yeah, I was wondering what happened if there was a problem.
I hit leave instead of closed screen.
I see you're back.
So it's very hot today in Israel, so my
Okay.
Now back to our regular store sheet. Here we go. You have to make me host again. There we go. Share screen. No, that's not good.
Okay, it should work.
Okay, now we're good. Okay, there we go. Now, I'm going to share another, I'm going to share a different screen now. Let's do it with my map. Maps, documents, maps. I have it on the source sheet, but it's, I need to do it. I need to do it so it's landscape. So I'll do it from here. Map 3D, here we go. We want this one. Okay, that's good. Look at this map over here. That's another one which I want to show you. And this is the area of, let's see, without going to the borders nowadays, the big mountain range is from Beersheba. Remember? Let me mark this up. Oh, that's not, I didn't share my screen, did I? Hold up for a minute. I'm messing up today. Okay, share screen again. Okay, let me share my screen and open up this page here. But before we get this one, map of Nachalot, we want map this one. Here we go. Okay, if I have this mountain range from Beersheba in the south, right here, mountain range going up towards Hebron. This is the top of the mountain range. We'll see this in a minute. And you have Pitchchem. That's going to be the heart of the country. Okay. Now, the international highway, that's the smudge on the map. That goes through Megiddo. Now, I need to open up a different map to appreciate this map. Put all these drawings and stop this share. And I have to share one other map with you. Topography of Israel map. Here we go. This map is it's copyrighted, so I can't share it. I can share my screen, but I can't send it to you. Now I have to share my screen again. Here we go. Share screen, and here we go. This map is really good. It's a little highlighted. I mean, highlighted with colors. It's, to highlight the differences in height. But notice, here's our coastal plain. Okay. Here's the big mountain range, which this mountain range in the middle, let me annotate again. If I look at this mountain range here in the middle, starting down here in the area of Beersheba, and then it goes to there up here to Hebron, up here to Beit Lechem, Yerushalayim, Shomron. That's the top of the mountain range. That's called Highway 60 nowadays. That's Derech Avot. Notice when Avram comes to the land, where does he go to first? Avram first comes to Shechem, over here. From Shechem, he goes to Beit El, over here. From there, he goes to Hebron, over here. From Hebron, he goes to Beersheba, down here. That's the heart of the country. That's all biblical history. Why? Because there, the land is good. The land's fertile and a mountain land. You can grow fruits and fruits and crops, etc. The international highway goes along the coast over here, where Highway 6 is today. That only when we're superpower we conquer. But all the main cities, there's a nice highway that goes from Shechem to the coastal plain, from Yerushalayim, from Ramallah basically, Nachal Ayalon takes you to the coastal plain. That's Highway 443 today. From Hebron, you have Nachal Beit Guvrin. It takes you to Ashkod and Ashkelon. And then Beersheba is going to be the major highway going around the land if someone's traveling to the desert, coming through Jordan, they'll go that way. It's called Derech HaMelech. That's the other option. But all those cities are hubs that meet on the north-south highway with the east-west highways. That's why they're important cities. That's where Avram can call it in God's name, because that's where people are living, and he can make an impact. And he can make a living. Now, what happened historically is that because the coastal plain is always controlled by superpowers, when we cross, when we, after 40 years, end up over here, let me clear up all these drawings here for a minute. In Chumash, after we lost the battle, we came in this way with the Mapilim and we lost. 40 years later, we cross around Jordan. We come down from here, fight Sichon over here, and we end up set up camp in Arbot Moab. We cross the Jordan over here by Yericho. And little by little, we take the mountain range. Our camp is in Gilgal. Yeshua moves the Mishkan to Shiloh to here because we want to populate the land. Yehuda does a good job taking the mountain range over here. Ephraim gets a decent job over here. Menashe does a good job here and over here. Chatzi Menashe on this area. And the rest of the land has a lot of conquering to do. We saw that in the end of Yeshua at the beginning of Sefer Shoftim. We take the mountain range. We really don't conquer most of the coastal plain. And during the time of the Shoftim, we know our arch enemy, the Plishtim, come in from Crete, or from the sea people, and they take over the coastal plain. What's going to happen? All the battles of Sefer Shoftim, the key battles, are going to be in Emek Yisrael. Devorah, here's Har Tavor. Nachal Kishon is over here by the Tavor. Gidon's battle in Givat Hamoreh is over here. Let me get rid of these drawings here. But all the key battles of what to think about is here in Emek Yisrael. Again, Gidon is over here. Devorah is over here and down to here. And to be able to control the Jezreel Valley, which is going to be the key crossing point in the main highway, and to connect Israel with the Galilee, that's going to be a key challenge. Only when we have a united country and a united army and all the Shvatim working together, first under Shaul and then under David, we're able to conquer the land and set up a monarchy. Now, if you follow the tribes, just where the tribes are located, it's real easy. First, we'll start with Leah's children. Leah's children take Reuven, takes Avery Yarden over here. I'll leave Avery down, but Reuven's over here. And then Shimon sort of gets followed up with Yehuda. Levi doesn't get a Nachala. And Yehuda gets this part of the country, the southern part of the country. And if later he gets stronger, he can take over that part. I'll change my color for a minute. Here. Bnei Rachel get Binyamin, Ephraim, and Menashe, pretty much the middle of the country. If I go back to Bnei Leah, they get Yisachar Zvulun. Yisachar is the Jezreel Valley, the eastern side, and Zvulun is going to be the western side of the Jezreel Valley. And then the Shvachot, make them pink, let's say. The Shvachot get, God takes this area over here to the north, and then Dan belongs here. He doesn't make it in the beginning. Yehuda gives him this land over here instead, but Dan belongs here. Naphtali is the upper Galilee, like Ritzvat is in Har Meron, and Asher is the western upper Galilee on that side over there. But basically, at the center of the country are Bnei Rachel, got it? Flanked to the south and north by Bnei Leah, and the Bnei Shvachot get the peripheral side, the northern, get to the north. That's basically how the land's divided up. You can get details in the bracha that Moshe gives the Shvatim at the end of Chumash B'Zot HaBracha. Now, one last part of the comes up. The big battles in Sefer Shoftim, where are they now? They're easy to see. The Plishtim are the arch enemy in the second half of Sefer Shoftim. They've taken over the coastal cities of Ashkelon. Let me make this a different color now. I'll make that blue, now green. It's good. Okay. Ashkelon, Ashdod, and Aza, and then Gat. We'll see over here. Gat's over here, Gat's over here, and Ekron's over there, whatever it is. But here's Nachal Hela, and here's Tel Azekah, pretty much over here. The battle of David and Goliath is going to be over here. The first battle that Shaul has with the Plishtim have infiltrated into Binyamin, and that's why they become an existential threat. And Shaul is a great leader because he gets rid of them and moves them back to the coastal plain. But Shaul begins fighting over here with them. David pushes him back already in his famous battle with Goliath. And they're off the mountain range finally. later Shaul's final battle, the Plishtim come along this side, come to the Gibeah from the north. That's where Shaul dies, in the Gibeah. But little by little, we take the Plishtim, kick them out back to the coastal plain, and we basically control the mountain range. And that mountain range becomes the center of Jewish history. But the reason why we have all these battles, that all the battles are happening in key strategic places in the land of Israel, either in Emek Yisrael and Sefer Shoftim, or on the border between the mountain range and the Shvela in Sefer and Sefer Shmuel. Okay, I'll stop here for questions. Let me check this chat real fast. Okay. Amalek had a massive fortress on top of Adi Al-Rish. A quick thing about Amalek. My understanding of Amalek is we find them coming out of Egypt. They're in the Sinai. We find them in the Negev. We find them in Ivar Yarden. We find them in Emek Yisrael. Basically, wherever there's an opportunity, either to attack unprotected travelers or when a battle is going on between nations, they'll attack the home front. Or they'll come to the battlefield the day after the battle and collect all the booty, from the wounded or dead soldiers. But they're opportunists to take advantage of unprotected people. And that's what makes them so evil. That's why they have no fear of God. But that's the theme on Asher and Amalek. But we don't find Amalek with specific land anywhere, like one area that's Amalek forever. But we find them in areas that are that aren't populated, because that's what nomadic people do. Now, Midianites are also nomadic people, but they make a living by trade. They make an honest living. Amalek makes a living by stealing and attacking and robbing. Now, back to next question. Ruth, in ancient times was a heavily forested, but waves of invaders with hatchets. Oh yeah, okay, very good. We find in ancient, there was a lot more greenery than nowadays until the time of the Turks. When the Turks wanted to build a railroad, they cut down most of the trees in Israel. And most of the forestation that we had for thousands of years, the Ottomans got rid of most of it. Other conquerors beforehand didn't do such a bad job either. But the assumption is that Israel was much more heavily forested than it is nowadays. We saw that with the Battle of Avshalom, when the Assyrians called. But there's a lot more trees and forests in Israel during biblical times. Okay, any other questions on the map part? Now, but we don't have time to do is I'll share with you a Rambam. We'll take 2-3 more minutes. I'll share with you a famous Rambam. Let me open up the Rambam. 1 second. Rambam. It should be on my source sheet. 1 second. The Rambam talks about the borders of Israel. Here. It's not this one. Not that one. I lost it. In a nutshell, let me get to borders. 1 second. Sheets. Give me 1 second. Chumash and borders. Here we are. Okay. Here it is. Okay, here we are. And not leave meeting. Again, share. Okay. Borders of Israel. Here we are. The Rambam says like this. Amazing statement. In Hilchot Trumot, Trumot is only heaven and land of Israel. So I need to know where the land of Israel is to be chayv in Trumot, to be obligated Trumot. Since Trumot and Masod are only applicable, according to Deraita from the Torah, in Eretz Yisrael. What's Eretz Yisrael? He doesn't give a geographic definition. He gives a political one. Eretz Yisrael mura b'chol makom, yarzot shekavesh otan melech Yisrael shofet onavim midat rov Yisrael. Basically, but in a nutshell, God sets aside a land for Am Yisrael to inherit, to possess. Anywhere that we're able to conquer and be sovereign, that's called kibbutz. When we establish our sovereignty within the land that God promised our forefathers, that becomes Eretz Yisrael halachically. So therefore, I don't need a geographic border. I need a political border. Any area where there's Jewish sovereignty. Not Jewish ownership, but sovereignty. A Jewish state. And that's the idea of a shofet or navi, mitat rov Yisrael. that we have in the time of King David. We have to have not just one shevet, but a yachid, a single person, or a mishpacha, or a shevet even. They did their own kibush, did their own conquest, even if it's within the land that was given to Avraham Avinu, in Eretz Canaan, we'll see in a minute, isn't called Eretz Yisrael for mitzvot. In other words, we need kibush, we need the people of Israel as a nation. And that's why Yeshua, even though the Yerusha wasn't complete, he divided it up on behalf of Israel, all the tribes together in Shiloh. That's chapter 18 in Yeshua. Okay? And land that David captured before he got all of Eretz Canaan, he calls it Syria. He says like this, it's not like Eretz Yisrael l'chol davar, okay? But not like Chutzas l'chol davar, like Bavel and Mitzrayim. But the Rambam says, Bavel and Mitzrayim can never become Israel. You can't capture Bavel and Mitzrayim. The assumption is we never will. Bavel, that's Nahar Prat. Mitzrayim is Nahar Mitzrayim. That's, the countries of Mesopotamia and Egypt, that's not on our radar at all. Our land's located in between Bavel and Egypt, between Mesopotamia and Egypt. Okay? And therefore, what can we do? Calcom didn't come, right? Because he captured them before he captured all of Eretz Canaan. Now, here he says as follows, and this will end. Vilu tafas ko Eretz Canaan li gvulotea tchila. Had Yeshua first taken, or David, taken all of Eretz Canaan, everything, right? And afterwards conquered other lands. Then it would have the din of Eretz Yisrael l'chol davar. Meaning, what's basically Rambam saying? That first we take Eretz Canaan. Once we have Eretz Canaan, we can expand our borders to the south, to the Negev. We can expand our borders to the east, to Transjordan. We can expand our borders to the north, into Lebanon. But never as far as Mesopotamia and Egypt. Because they're separate countries. Our goal is not to be imperialist and capture the whole Middle East. The idea is to have a spiritual influence over the whole Middle East and over all the other nations. But to do that, we have to have a country that's on the map, that's politically involved. Now, our land can grow naturally. So we start with Eretz Canaan, we start from down to Beersheba, and we can expand. And that's why in the condition they make with Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, once we take Eretz Canaan and it's finished, then we go back to Eretz Yarden and it becomes part of Eretz Yisrael. So basically, Eretz Canaan is a geographic border, like we saw in Parshat Maaseh, basically from Dan to Beersheba, from the Mediterranean to the Jordan. Haaretz, or the land of Israel, Eretz Yisrael, is anywhere where there's Jewish sovereignty. And that's why the Rambam says that even in Bayit Sheni, even when we come back, it's only the Rabbanan. The Truma Bizman Hazeh, even places where the people from came back, Olei Bavel came back, and Shibat Zion, even time of Ezra, is not the Araita, because there's no Truma. So Torah, only in Eretz Yisrael, meaning only in land that has Jewish sovereignty. And when all of Israel is there. And then, and like will happen hopefully in the future. Now, that's why a lot of people, I'll just end with this. Some people bring up what would happen if the majority of Israel, if the majority of the Jewish people move to Israel. And we don't have a diaspora anymore. We have a small diaspora, but the majority are living in Israel. Would that make Trumot to Masrot in Israel the Araita, the biblical obligation, not the Rabbanan? That's if Kibush Dayan Shmei Kibush, meaning if, is the Israeli government considered Malchut Yisrael? That's an awesome question. Who defines the Jewish people? Now, how could a group of secular Jews, Zionists, who happen to, get a right to set up a state here, does that make them the Jewish people? That's a great question. It was, what are the halachic ramifications of a secular Jewish state? Now, what would happen if a right-wing government comes and turns it into a religious state? That might even make a bigger halachic problem. But that's a big question. What defines a Jewish state? Again, there's tons of work done on that. It's not a new topic. It's been discussed for the last, 100 years. But that comes up a lot. But as long as more than half of Am Yisrael doesn't move to Israel, then we don't have a problem. That's why some people would love to move here, but they don't because they don't want it to be a problem. So they stay in Chutz Laaretz. So we have to give them a big yasher koach.
Never to amaze me.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So that was just a little boring Bein HaZmanim shir on the borders of Israel. Maybe Asher. I know Asher has a couple other points, but we'll stop here and we'll, if you want to discuss it quickly. Actually, we'll do it at a different time because it's late already. But I just wanted to get the main idea that we're a nation they're supposed to represent God, and you need a land as a vehicle to accomplish your job. And the location of the land is super important, but the topography of the land, the key mountain range in the middle, the coastal plain, the international highway, all of that information, right, has a tremendous effect on Israel's political history and hence prophetic history. And that's what causes all these wars in the Middle East. Okay, everyone have a good week. And next week we're back to Elul topics. No more Zionist topics. Back to good old Tshuva and Elul and holidays.
What's your topic next week? The biblical...
Next week will be interesting. It's the difference between Chagei Tishrei. I'll give a little promo. And Chagei and Shosh Regalim. For some reason, in Sefer Shmot and in Dvarim, there's no Chagei Tishrei. There's no Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Shmini Atzeret. We only find them in Vayikra and Bamidbar. We have to explain why.
Okay.
And is there just a technical difference, or is there a fundamental reason? There are definitely two sets of holidays. You can't miss them. And what came first, and how they're related, and why they're in different books?
Are you going to? I don't want to spoil anything, but are you going to talk about the double korbanot idea?
I might bring that as a proof, but not as, I'm not going to start from there.
Okay. No, I understand at the end. Okay. Yeah. It doesn't come up.
I think that's a couple years ago.
Yes.
I have a newer version of it.
In your name, but I'm not going to say it now. I'll let you say it next week. But, that's a very beautiful idea about how our korbanot work that I first heard from Rabbi Liebtag, and I share it often. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. Look forward to seeing you next week. And as I mentioned earlier, on Slichus night, Erev Yom Kippur, Rabbi Liebtag's class will be Saturday nights. He'll do three Sundays, and then we'll have Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. Rabbi Liebtag volunteered. I said, but, you know, he said, yeah, he gets up early. He Torah, you know, Yomam Valayla, so that'll be 5 a.m. in Israel. That'll be
more due to old age than Torah study.
September 9th and September 23rd. Okay. I just posted in Chatwalk. Most of our upcoming classes are on the website. If you want to take a quick look, you can. And to register, like I mentioned, it'll be a different password next week to get in, a different link as we move to our Elul series. My class in the city, even though it's technically Rosh Chodesh Elul, we'll keep it on the old system. We'll start the Elul. I'll give Rabbi Liebtag the kavod of opening up our Elul series. And Thursday night's Parsha Shir, Dr. Tammy Jacobowitz will be giving it this week. Rabbi Debo finishes his series on sexuality and Tanakh this week on Tuesday. Attraction and culture, Fords, Ferraris, and Pharaohs. That's the topic of this week. And we look forward to learning with you. And we have a whole, you know, series. And as always, invite your friends to join in. And everybody should have a wonderful day, a wonderful week. Enjoy the waning weeks of summer. You know, the middle of August, you really notice the days are getting shorter and shorter. 15 minutes a week here in Toronto. But anyways, I hope everybody's doing well. We should hear good news from everybody and from Israel, from everywhere. And enjoy. And we look forward to learning with you in the near future. Have a great day. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Thank you for everybody. Okay. See you soon. Oh, yeah. That Naomi. Okay. You're not here. So I'll tell you right. What he was right. He was being sarcastic. Yes. It when half of the Jewish people live in Israel, it's going to create all kinds, there'll be have issues of Yovel and all kinds of issues will arise that we had to deal with. Though, of course, in Rabbi Liebtag's unique style, he sort of put that a positive twist. That's why people like me stay in Chutz Laaretz. So it shouldn't be half the people living in Israel, but there are halakhic issues that will arise, and it's coming soon. Okay. Halakhic issues, I guess, are good sometimes. All right. Have a wonderful day, everybody.